You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi, welcome to Built for the Stage podcast. This is Joe Roscoe, founder of Built for the Stage, Broadway's number one fitness platform. If you want to try a free trial, go to the website builtforthestage.com or click the link in the description of this episode and you can work for 7 days with your own Broadway fitness coach on an online app. So check it out. No catch, no gimmicks. BuiltForTheStage.com. If you like Built for the Stage podcast, please rate, subscribe, and leave a comment. It'd be greatly appreciated. All right, please enjoy this conversation. Okay, thanks for joining us on the podcast this morning. We got James Brown III here, and he is sunbathing while us New Yorkers are just freezing our butts off in like minus 130 degree weather.
That is true.
Thanks for joining us, James. Where are you right now? Where are you vacationing?
I am vacationing in Sydney, Australia. It was 97 degrees yesterday. It's amazing.
Oh my goodness. And just leisure out there, what kind of activities are you doing out in Australia?
So we'll have been here for 2 weeks. The first week I was in Melbourne at the Australian Open because I'm a huge tennis fan. So I went to the last week we got Australian Open. I did get to hang out with, to do a little bit of Harry Potter only because they're opening a company here in Melbourne. So I hung out with our director and director a little bit. And then in Sydney, I've just been doing beach and shopping and catching up with some old friends as well that are here in Sydney. So it's been amazing.
You didn't seem to have like the typical start that maybe most actors had. You look like you were involved in a lot of things. You were interested in a lot of stuff. I saw you were a two-sport letterman in track and field and also football, and you were really into fashion as well. Like, how was that growing up, and when did you finally stumble upon, performing?
I grew up in California for the most part, in Orange County, and like you said, I ran track and I played football. And actually, in middle school, I also started doing plays, but just for fun. I actually couldn't even really tell you why I auditioned for the first play that I did. But I did, and I had a good time, so I just always did it as something fun to do. But truly, my focus was track and academics. So then when I went to Brown, I was studying psychology and was pre-med, and I was running track there. And then after my last year at Brown, I ended up getting a psych research grant to do psych research on male dancers, and that's what brought me to New York. And, long story short, part of the research was auditioning, and I auditioned for something, ended up getting it, and never looking back on psych and medicine again after that.
Wow.
But yeah, I think my background is definitely in, my physical background was definitely in athletics, and then
So when you were, that's crazy. So when you were studying psychology and you chose to do this research on male dancers, were you dancing heavily at the time? Were you really into that, or how was that at that time?
Yeah, so I was, so I hurdled at Brown, and my hurdling coach, you know, part of his training was just making sure that his hurdlers stayed flexible. And I was flexible only because I had been a gymnast and, you know, just had been an athlete growing up. So I was like, well, I danced in the musicals in high school, you know, just because you have to if you're doing a musical. I was like, fucking kind of dance, and I'm flexible, so I might as well. So because of Brown's curriculum, you have actual electives that you can take that can be anything.
So you mentioned about fashion, and on your website, there's some photos of Broadway Style Guide with some very well-known names and actors. What was your part in that?
Yeah, so a few years ago, I guess about 3 or 4 years ago now, I started Broadway Style Guide with 4 or 5 other business partners. And I was the creative director and fashion editor of it. It no longer exists. We actually ended up being acquired by Tenetix. And so now the team from Broadway Style Guide does all the creative stuff for Tenetix. It was basically we wanted to create the Broadway version of like a Vanity Fair where our mission was to merge the world of fashion and theater because those worlds are so cohesive and intertwined with music and with TV and film and even with sports. And oddly enough, it has never felt, or not ever, but in my time of being on Broadway, in the last probably 20 years, it hasn't quite felt the same in terms of integration, despite being in New York City, being in like one of the, you know, largest neckers of fashion.
Yeah.
It never quite felt connected.
Add a little bit about your day-to-day fitness-wise. So if you're following James on Instagram, or you've Googled him, or you're familiar with him. He's a very in shape guy, and I'm sure we'd love to know the secrets of how to maintain and acquire a physique like yours. What do you do on a daily basis? Just kind of run us through maybe some points of performance that kind of lead you to success.
So I got, happened to CrossFit when I was doing Rocky. So typically my day starts, you know, pretty early only because I'm an early riser and but I don't leave the bed. I just am there relaxing. I email, I, you know, do whatever kind of work I can do from my bed, but just to kind of get the day started slowly. And then usually I go to the gym and do whatever CrossFit WOD is like on schedule.
How do you balance really getting after it per se in the gym or chasing pretty extreme goals while balancing performing or rehearsing for a show?
Yeah. You definitely have to find the balance, and it'll be different for everyone. But for me, I've learned that working hard in the gym helps me physically with whatever project I'm working on, specifically the one, you know, specifically Harry Potter right now, because it's such a physical show. And any show you do 8 times a week, if it's physical, if it's not physical, either way, you're kind of doing repetitive movement 8 shows a week. And so that anything like that can always kind of make you prone to injury just because you're doing such repetitive motion. So I just find that working hard in the gym to really balance myself out and make sure I'm kind of hitting all of, you know, both the targeted muscles that are required for my job at night, but also the ones that I'm not using at night. And so, to me, the harder I work in the gym, the easier my life is on stage. I just can't like be competitive about it and kind of push beyond my limit because, you know, also at the end of the day, it's like at this point, I'm not trying to be a competitor. I'm just trying to, you know, maintain my strength and superficially just look good because most of the roles I get require me to be shirtless.
Yes. Dancer, singer, actor, body, for sure. That's such a great point that you bring up because I oftentimes come across this so many times with performers where they tell me, hey, I'm really interested in Build for the Stage. I can't wait to get started with you. I'm in a show right now. I'll reach out when the show closes. Or, you know, I get a workout in the show. When really, like you're saying, the body needs to be forced to adapt and to continually progress. And when you're doing those same repetitive motions, like you mentioned, yes, you really do get in danger of either the injury or going backwards in your fitness when you're tricking yourself into believing that doing this thing over and over and over again is actually okay.
Yeah.
And that gets into a whole other fitness conversation of like how you shouldn't do the same, you know, three routines that you just love to do, you know, like on Friday, I love to ride the elliptical for 45 minutes while reading my favorite novel, you know, or those same repetitive things. So that's such a great thing that you brought up. I'm so glad that you also mentioned that as well. You made your Broadway debut in 2004 in The Frogs. Is that right?
I did, yeah.
All right, so you performed in this mysterious show to me called The Frogs. I have to do my homework on it. Honestly, I'm not quite sure what that might be all about. But now in Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, this is about 15 years later. And in between there, you've booked about, I don't know, 72 Broadway shows and and a whole bunch of other stuff. Who was James in 2004 compared to who he is now in Harry Potter?
I definitely will say my skills as an actor, singer, and dancer have grown immensely since 2004 because... You know, back then I was, you know, in 2004, I was only 3 years out of school and out of school, which I didn't go to do this. So, you know, my first musical out of school was Lion King, which was right before The Frogs. I was doing The Lion King when I booked The Frogs and I was on tour. So that was kind of a little bit of a conservatory for me, which... I was taking ballet every morning with the like regional ballet company we were in the city that we were in. They would let us take company class with them. So I was taking that. I was taking voice lessons with our associate musical director. And, you know, at the point I felt like a strong actor, but those other two skills weren't really something that like I felt like I could compete with the rest of the community in. So that those 2 years really kind of helped me solidify that. But even still, by the time I got Frogs, it was still a learning curve. I was Susan Stroman's band captain, so there was like a learning curve there. But, you know, it's my first time working with this amazing woman, you know, acclaimed director, choreographer, so I learned a lot from her then. But now, you know, 15 years later, I am confident in my skills as an actor, as a dancer, as a singer. You know, I'm dancing less now by choice. But I feel like I can walk into rooms with people who went to conservatories and I have the, you know, I, and with my skills and in being able to play and imagine and, you know, find the truth and stuff and find the story and things and really kind of delve into character and just being a person. And they're certainly all things that I've just learned through class and amazing directors in these last 15 years, you know, which certainly has led me to be in my first straight play on Broadway. I've done a few straight plays, a bunch of straight plays regionally, but, you know, in my first straight play on Broadway, in my first principal role on Broadway, you know, I now, while I'm in, you know, in Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, I'm a much stronger performer all around than I was in 2004.
Yeah. You brought up people along the way that you've worked with in all of this time. Are there any fellow actors that you had the pleasure of working with that really made an impact on you in some way, that you learned from or really took something with you that added to your self as a person or just as a performer?
Stephen Hoggett, who I'm working with now, but who I've worked with quite a bit, he's such an amazing director, choreographer, movie director, fight director. He, you know, kind of jack of all trades, but he's such an inspirational person, creator to work with in a room and create a piece. And he's really encouraged me as an actor to explore. So he's someone very similar to that is Alex Timbers. I mentioned Susan Stroman. She has been a huge and loyal supporter and someone that's really encouraged me to explore.
What does that mean to you to explore? What does that mean to you?
I always think back to this acting class that I had where one of my teachers who's amazing, his name is Bob Krakauer. He's like, it's called a play for a reason. Like, either way, it has to be an exploration because, you know, we have James Brown III has experiences, has life experiences. I've, you know, traveled and lived lives and learned different things. And, you know, and so how can I explore using those ideas and those experiences? How can those things influence the characters that I play so that they're not just one-dimensional ideas? It's not just the words on the page, but how do I explore the life of this person and then use that to tell the story that the writer has written. So, you know, especially when you're creating something and the writer has just written something on a page and the director is there, you know, you're all kind of trying to tell the story. Most of the time it's not completely mapped out in the person's head, and it really does take the like final step of the actor bringing it to life to kind of complete that idea. But it all, to me, comes from exploration, comes from play.
Yeah.
And not like being confined to one idea or boxed into one thing, but, you know, truly kind of being like a Meryl Streep or Cate Blanchett where you're constantly seeing them be someone different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. Speaking of play, the play you're in, Harry Potter, is a two-part show. So,
yeah.
Kind of unique nowadays. Actually, not kind of, but very unique currently in the theater. So, how has that been preparing for it? First off, rehearsing for a two-part show, like the amount of scenes and content that you had to rehearse and learn basically was like probably putting up two shows at once. And then also, yep. Like, what are some of the challenges or the fun stuff of being involved with a show that has two parts?
Yeah. So great question to ask right now, because I'm in the middle of rehearsing with the second year cast. So I've decided to stay on for year two. And so I'm doing the show at night and then rehearsing for the year with the year two cast during the day. And it's, you know, they've scheduled a 3-month process to put year two into the show. So it's about 28 people. And like you said, we're rehearsing two full plays. You know, so it's amazing because it means that our characters in the show have, you know, 5 hours of content, 5 hours of a journey, which is so unlike most shows, right? So we truly get to explore double the amount of material and tell twice the story. It does mean more lines. It does mean more blocking. It's more magic, so that's exciting. But because the show is such an ensemble show, one of the great things that it does is it really bonds our cast. So, you know, year two is certainly bonding as a cast, but because year one, we've been together so long, I mean, we are a tight group of people, and I've never been so social outside of the theater with the cast before as I am with the, you know, my group at Harry Potter. And, like, you know, we rent Airbnbs on the weekend because we get 2 days off. So, you know, we'll go up and go skiing together. Or in the summer, we went to the huge house upstate and I took them to pick all the Brits because, you know, they've not seen an NBA basketball game. I took them to a Knicks game. You know, so that has been exciting. One of the other huge things, because it's a British show and it's a Stephen Hoggett show, we have a mandatory warm-up every day. So despite the fact that it's a play, there's a lot of movement in it. So most of the actors in the show don't come from the musical theater world. And so it's good for there actually to be a thing in place to make us warm up, and also helps continue to build and strengthen that idea of ensemble. So we all have a mandatory warm up at 12:30 for 2 o'clock show. It's about 20 to 30 minutes, and it includes like a fight call and that kind of stuff. But yeah, so it's every day. So every day we warm up together, and it's, you know, it's like a I'm one of the movement captains, and so, you know, one of us will kind of run the warm up, and it's either based on a Stephen Hoggett warm, like specific warm up, or you know, I have some others that I do with them as well. But, you know, it's everything from circuits to like a dance warm up to yoga. We have a vocal warm up. We play games sometimes. So it's cool. It's cool. It is a lot of time in the theater because, again, we are telling two stories. And you know, we all have British accents, and it is, you know, it is a lot of work, but it's so fun. And we, you know, we all get to play wizards and witches.
Yeah. It must be nice when you're doing, you know, you said you're going to go into year two. It must be nice as a performer to have two separate parts, because, you know, if, when you're doing the same part over and over and over again, or the same show when you're just doing a one-part show, it's the same show, but in your case, you're kind of rotating shows each performance, which is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the biggest reasons why I felt comfortable signing on for year two, because I'm not actually sick of the show. You know, we do 8 shows a week just like everyone else, except in reality, we're doing 4 shows a week. So, you know, on a 5-show weekend where you have a Friday, 2 Saturday, 2 Sunday, we're not doing 5 of the same show. Part 2, we actually, of the 5-show weekend, part 2, we only do it twice. You know, so on a Saturday matinee, where typically Saturday matinee is rough for everyone, you know, we're finishing up part 1 on Saturday matinee, and in our mind, we know that we only have to do part 1 more time that weekend. And the way the show is structured, part 2 is like a little bit more emotionally intense, but it's less physically intense. So part 2 is kind of, for most of us, part 2 is like just an easier show. So you know, going into Saturday night into part two, you're like, great, let's do it. So I think having the two parts means that we're doing everything half the amount that you are in a normal show.
All right, so I'm going to make you kind of choose something here. You have all these experiences, right? From TV and film, theatrical, on stage. Do you have any memories or memory that pops out when you're like, man, that was one of the best times of my life? I ask the question because I look at your resume, I'm like, he's got to have so many cool experiences that he's been fortunate enough to have. And I'd love for you to just share one or two with the listeners out there that, you know, that you got to go through.
Oh man, yeah, that's always such a hard question because I feel, you know, like it feels like every kind of, you know, every 3 years of one that's like, that was, you know. So I, you know, obviously Dancing with Michael Jackson is like ridiculous and literally no one else will do that again because he's not here with us anymore. Working with Oprah on The Color Purple, like she was around and we got to be at her show and, you know, she was at the theater and amazing, winning the Tony for Memphis, you know, us winning and performing on the Tonys that Tony's was unreal. Was an amazing experience, you know, getting to be a Disney King. And I guess lastly, like, you know, right now I feel like I'm living in an amazing time for myself. I am just having such a great experience with Harry Potter. I love the show. I love the experience. And I've also just, I think, gotten to a place in my life where I truly understand living, and it's very easy in this life as an actor, especially as a Broadway actor, of kind of benchmarking your life or marking moments in your life based on the show that you're in, which is fine, but not acknowledging and experiencing the rest of life. So, you know, in the last 2 years, I've promised myself to live, which is one of the reasons why I'm in Sydney, Australia right now. Like, I'm making this money. I'm working 8 shows a week. So I'm working hard, and I need to play hard outside of work now. So, you know, I am creating memories for myself outside of the theater. And so today is an amazing day because I love my job and I am happy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Moderation is key for sure. So how did you do it? Earlier I said 72 shows, but I was obviously kidding. You've been in 9 Broadway shows, 2 national tours, a laundry list of TV, film. You've been in nationally credited regional theaters. Were you lucky? Were you blessed? Did you know the right people? Like, if you were to sit down with a young performer and just tell them some bit of knowledge or advice to even come close to the successful career that you have, what would you tell them?
That's such a great question. There, you know, it's certainly the perfect storm. You know, I have done a bunch of Q&As and talk backs, masterclasses with young performers. And a few of the things that I tell them is like, you know, if this is something they want to do, then they should continue to train and educate themselves. You know, that's certainly one of the most important things. And it's not wildly important where you get the training and education, just as long as you're getting it. So, you know, at the end of the day, in the audition room, you will find people who went to Juilliard, and you will find people who went to, you know, Sally Struthers School of Acting.
Right.
But if you both end up in the room and they need you to sing an A, or they need you to tell the story, like, if you can sing the A and you didn't go to Juilliard and a Juilliard person can't sing the A, like, they're going to cast the person that can sing the A for the most part. So, like, get an education. So that's one thing, is to continue to train. And while you're doing that, all of the passions that I had in life growing up, I really leaned into them. I loved athletics. I loved academics. I did all of these, clubs and everything, like all of those things at school. In school, I leaned into them and I loved doing it. And all of those things have certainly, those experiences have played into, like, my ability to juggle, you know, all the things you have to juggle as an actor. They're just extra life experiences that help me explore, help me to delve into characters. You know, certainly being an athlete and being competitive has helped in the audition room. So all of those things that kind of filter in. And once you're here, it really is about continuing to train, being nice to people, being a person that people want to work with, making an impression on creative teams and even your fellow actors, because so much of it is networking. At this point in my career, it's very rare that I get a job, even if it's TV and film, that I get a job that I don't know someone on the team, either creatively or fellow actors. It's very rare that I don't know someone on the team. And it's very rare that I've kind of just gotten the show or the job cold. You know, at this point, it really is like, oh, I've worked with Stephen Hoggett 5 times now. So it makes sense that sitting behind the table, he says to the rest of the team who doesn't know me, he's great, let's cast him, you know. So being a good person and being the kind of person that a producer wants to have in the room when you're creating this multi-million-dollar thing is important. It's important for them to have people in them they trust, because they're giving it over. They're giving this, $25 million show over to, 15 actors to tell the story. They need to be able to trust that you're going to,
mm-hmm. come through.
to do the thing.
Yeah.
So it is who you know, and it is, the impression you've left on them. And sometimes that impression is just the impression you give in the audition room. You know, if you do walk into a room of people you don't know, you walk into the room and you're yourself, and you don't try to be someone else. You just try to be the best version of yourself, and then let them decide if that's what they're looking for. Because, most of the time, they don't know what they're looking for until they walk into the room, especially when it's a new project.
You had mentioned that you drew from, like, experiences of your past of juggling different interests. How do you juggle your day-to-day? What are some daily disciplines that kind of keep you on track on a daily basis? You know, one of them we know is going to the gym. Maybe how do you keep your eating on track? How do you keep anxiety down and stay disciplined in things that you have to do outside the theater with such a busy schedule there? Just kind of run us through maybe a few things that really help keep you on track.
Yeah. So again, my 2 to 3 hours in the morning between 7:30 and 9:30 are really key in emails and any kind of businessy kind of work that I can do at that time. Really important for me. In the gym, I do intermittent fasting. So in terms of eating, actually, it makes my eating so great, because I start eating at 4 p.m. So I'm not even thinking about food in the first part of the day. So I eat from 4 to 12. So I'll eat a big meal before the show. I usually have a snack during the show, and then I'll have a big meal after the show. So that's really helped out in terms of food. And I have to eat. I have to get to take in like enough calories, because then I'm fasting for 16 hours after that. And I'll need, you know, I'll need that to carry me through that first part of my day. I love TaskRabbit. I'm a huge fan, especially in this time that I'm doing double duty. I've hired a TaskRabbit a few times to just kind of do some of those like personal assistant things that I don't have time in the day to do. So TaskRabbit, you know, any kind of like, you know, I guess I have the luxury of having a personal assistant to do stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that's helpful. And I swear by my iCal on my iPhone, like if it's not in my calendar, it just won't happen. It's not going to get done.
Yeah.
So I try to stay as organized as possible. And that way, when you are juggling different aspects of your life, things don't fall by the wayside. And so I'm like a huge fan of lists and my iCal. So I think that that's the big thing. So I try to work really hard from Wednesday to Sunday. So, you know, doing the show from Wednesday to Sunday, I'm trying to pack in all the like busy things outside of that and into that time as well, so that on Monday and Tuesday when I'm off from Harry Potter, I can also try to be as off as possible from the other things. And that also helps balance like anxiety in that, you know. So yeah. I will take weekends away. I'll go down to Miami for the week. I try to do that like once a month. And really, you know, so in terms of keeping myself sane, my off days, I try to make as off as possible and then work really hard, on the other days. So
very cool. Lastly, for just our listeners out there that maybe are in the midst of the grind or just going through that tough time in their career now, we mentioned so many great things that you have accomplished and have gotten to experience. In the midst of any of those times, was there a time that you'd be willing to share that, you know, it wasn't all butterflies and rainbows, as I like to say, and, you know, you had to bear down and go through some stuff to keep moving forward?
You know, one of the hardest things that happened for me in terms of my career was I ruptured my Achilles in the first preview of Ghost on Broadway. And so, you know, so that's an injury that I had to have surgery. I had, it was a lot of physical therapy to get back. And I ruptured it on doing a tumbling skill, you know, doing a back layout. So it was important to me that I get that skill back. And it, in the time, it became less important for me to need to perform it again in an 8-show week kind of thing. But I just wanted to make sure that I actually could do, you know, like I can do a back layout again. But, you know, so it was about 8 months of recovery. It was about 8 months before I was back in a show. And so that was hard. I mean, it was hard because I, especially at that point in my career, I had been so used to jumping from show to show to show. My life was, you know, like it was an 8-show a week kind of a thing. And so, you know, I had the surgery. I was at home for a couple of weeks before I could kind of go back to the theater. And even though I was in a boom, you know, I still kind of got to be there in the capacity of like running rehearsals and noting the show. But then once it closed, I was still rehabbing. So the show closed, and now I have a few months of not being able to do anything because the show's closed. And so that was a hard time, more mentally than anything, just because I was so used to being able to do physically. But what was great is I leaned into other passions. So I couldn't dance at the time, but my first love for this was acting. So that was really where I started to really focus in on acting and singing. And while I was doing my rehab, I was, you know, taking classes and acting classes and singing, and it just it helped me refocus my wants, and it really changed the, I think, the trajectory of my career, of not just kind of being not just dance captain understudying the principal, like that had been kind of the thing I was doing over and over again, and that's what cast directors knew me as, and producers, and which was great, and it's an amazing career, and but my love is acting, so I wanted to play the role, I wanted to dance less, and that injury kind of forced me to focus on that. So it's part of why I think I'm in Harry Potter now. But it was a hard time. It's a hard time for someone. I'd never had an injury like that in all the years of being an athlete. I had never had an injury that had taken me out more than a week or two. So, you know, for it to happen in my 30s was weird. Because I actually didn't have the experience of having that kind of injury.
Yeah.
You know, you as an athlete, you're always kind of competing with something. You're never competing 100%. You always have a little ache somewhere, but this was a big ache.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all I had for you, James. Anything that you want to leave with our listeners before we go? I really appreciate the time so far that you spent with us all the way out in the land of the kangaroo. So really appreciate your time.
Yeah. No, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This is really great to chat with you. And, you know, yeah, I like to say choose joy. How to be a good person.
And that'll do it from Built for the Stage podcast. Thanks again to James for being a guest on the podcast. And once again, you can find him on Instagram at JamesBrown3rd. You'll type that out, James Brown III. Or his website, www.jamesbrownthethird.com. Same way, JamesBrownIII.com. If you're a listener who's a performer and you're still kicking around whether you should try out the program or not, now's the time to do it. Do a free trial and let's become fitness buddies. Go to the website and fill out the contact form at www.builtforthestage.com or DM me on Instagram at builtforthestage. Thanks again for tuning in. It's me, Roscoe, signing off.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.